across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
Hello there. We really appreciate you downloading this podcast from the BBC. And don't forget, we're here fighting for you every day of the week. If you want to contact us, nolan@bbc.co.uk. I hope you enjoy today's podcast. The Stephen Nolan Show! Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Another Nolan Show this Friday morning. The Nolan Show understands the DUP is refusing to allow the rates cap to be lifted in Northern Ireland, which would have led to houses valued at, it's 400 odd grand, isn't it? More than 400 odd grand paying more. The owners of the most valuable homes here were in line to see their rates bills rise by up to £943. This was under proposals from the Sinn Féin Finance Minister, Keith Archibald it was at that time. But we can tell you the higher property tax is being blocked at the executive by the DUP. Now, I put this to the DUP Minister, Gordon Lyons, when he was in the Nolan studio, and he didn't deny it. Have a listen to this.
Well, look, I just think that if we're talking about wider reform of...
I'm talking about rates reform?
Of rates.
And the question
or
is the DUP
other,
blocking it?
If we're talking about rates reform or wider reform, I think we have to take into consideration the fact that right now, many, many people are finding it tight, that I think... we're already taxed to death, and I think that any increase on this would need to be very, very carefully considered. And
the question is a simple one, just so that we all know, so that we can all feed into the debate. Is the DUP blocking the proposal for rates, the rates cap, to increase?
Well, we didn't block anything because the finance minister didn't need executive approval to go out to consultation.
Do you support the rates
which is what she did. Look, we'll take all of these things under consideration, but none of this is straightforward. And on the wider point, I think that we're already taxed significantly.
But look, taking things under consideration is a politician's answer with respect when you don't want to answer the question. And what I'm trying to do with you today is you're being good enough to come in here, sit in front of your electorate. And so I think it's fair for them to know, is it your view, as I think you're nearly setting out, that you're going to protect people from against that tax increase? You're going to fight to protect them? Or you think Northern Ireland needs that money and it has to happen? So which is it? Just clear talking to the people who listen to this programme.
No, what I'm saying is I think that before we consider some of these other options in terms of revenue raising, that we need to make sure that we're spending the money that we have now in the right way, and that we're not putting undue burden on people. And I take that as a general principle around all of these issues in regards to revenue raising.
So you let me know what you think this morning, 030 30 80 55 55. Our BBC Northern Ireland Economics and Business Editor, John Campbell, with me this morning. Morning to you, John.
Good morning.
So there's the DUP saying, as a statement of intent, if you like, we're ready taxed to death. But the problem is we need more money into the system in Northern Ireland, don't we?
Well, there's the expectation from the UK government that we will raise more money locally. Now, they've set fairly modest targets around that. And we know that some additional money has been raised, but that's only by putting up the regional rate by around the rate of inflation. So nothing very dramatic has happened there. But we know that in terms of the broader discussions which the executive is seeking to have with the UK government about funding for Northern Ireland, that is very much something which the Treasury will come back to again and again, which is to say, if you want additional help around funding for Northern Ireland, then there also has to be some self-help in terms of the revenues you raise locally. And this would be one of the easiest to raise. To be honest, it would not bring in very much, but it's kind of like a statement of intent.
Well, exactly. So this would raise, I understand, John, you'll know better than I would, but lifting the cap to the suggested level, I think would raise about 2 million odd quid for the executive. And by way of context, a 5.5% pay increase for teachers would cost 80 million next year. So, look, the 2 million is a relatively small amount of money, but it is the statement of intent, as you've described it. This is the DUP saying, in a context of where we might need to raise revenue elsewhere, we are already taxed to death. Now, what do we do about that?
What does that mean, taxed to death? I don't know what that means. It's a bit of an imprecise phrase. What does it mean?
I have no idea.
I don't know what it means either. Northern Ireland pays the lowest household taxes of any region of the UK. We don't have water rates. We don't have council taxes paid in the same parts of the UK. So in that respect, no, we're out of whack with the rest of the UK in terms of household charges.
Like they pay
more than us in Wales, and even though Wales is probably a poorer part of the UK by this stage.
How can we say Wales is poorer than us?
Their GDP per head, and their economic activity rates, those sorts of things. Wales is a very weak economy. I'd say worse than Northern Ireland on many measures now.
And so, how then are we paying less tax? Who's deciding that? Is it the executive?
Yeah, fundamentally, yes, because the reason that other parts of the UK pay more in household charges is largely because they pay direct water charges, and we do not. That is the big difference. There's some difference around the rates versus the council tax that they have in other parts of the UK, but it's mainly down to water. Now there is a kind of a difference here in terms of the choices that we make, where I think in percentage terms, we're charging people more in terms of commercial business rates versus what we're charging people around on domestic rates. So there's potentially you could rebalance there, and certainly there are many, particularly in retail, who would say at the moment we have the balance wrong in terms of where the burden lies when we look at the overall rates take. So that's another area which can be looked at.
John, if we do look at rates for houses, talk us through what the cap currently is, and what it was Keith Archibald at the time, Finance Minister, Sinn Féin Minister, who wanted to raise it. So what did she want to do?
Just to understand what the cap is, rates are property tax based on the value of your house, but that's a 2005 valuation. So currently no houses are assumed to be worth more than £400,000 at a 2005 valuation for the purpose of paying rates. So even if you have a house which was valued at £1 million in 2005, you would only pay the same rates as somebody who has a house valued at £400,000. So that means that the very biggest houses in Northern Ireland, largely in North Down and South Belfast, to be honest, they currently pay the same rates as more modest detached houses. So what Keith Archibald's proposal was to raise that cap to £485,000, and that would impact the 8,000 most valuable homes. And that would mean that the rates charged to those houses would increase by between £740,000 and £943 per year, depending on which council area they were in, and that would bring in an additional £2 million a year in recurring revenue for the executive. Now, that £2 million a year, as you have suggested, in the context of Stormont's overall budget, is a very modest additional sum.
Why did, it's not for you to speak for, obviously, but what would the logic be around capping at 480 grand, raising it from 400 to 480 grand, rather than lifting the cap? And if people can afford a 2 million, 5 million, very few of those in Northern Ireland, house, a £2 million house in Northern Ireland, let them pay the going rate. Why not? Why protect the most wealthy?
Well, there had been a previous consultation under the sort of the direct rule period when the executive was down, and it did propose just lifting the cap entirely. But that would have led to a situation where you had some houses which would have been paying rates of 18 or 20,000 pounds a year. But that would have been much higher than even the poshest houses in the poshest areas of London. So the idea was to say that, well, if we remove the cap altogether, that then puts us way out of whack with the rest of the UK. So let's do something a bit more modest. And I think something which is, there's maybe a bit more potential political cover around that. But in this case, clearly, the DUP are not on board with this as yet. But we know that what Keith Archibald has talked about this, but when she was finance minister, that there was DUP opposition all along, because she told MLAs, I think back in December, that she had asked for her paper on rates to be considered at four meetings of the executive, and she said it had cross-party support from Alliance and the Ulster Unionists, but clearly at that point it was not being supported by the DUP and appears still not to be.
And John, for those people, no doubt, that will call us this morning and say, look, you know, rich pensioners, people who bought their homes 30, 40 years ago and don't have a lot of disposable income now, they could get caught up in this if the cap was lifted completely. But the money could be paid out of an estate if Stormont so desired after someone has died, couldn't it?
I'm not sure how many of these asset rich, income poor people there are really in Northern Ireland. It's kind of been a convenient myth at times. I've not really seen the evidence on it, but you know, maybe they do exist. Maybe there is a specific issue there. I don't know, but it would be good to see any evidence around that.
John, thank you very much indeed. The Irish News columnist Newton Emerson's with us today. Good morning, Newton.
Good morning.
Good morning, as is the former DUP Special Advisor David Graham. Morning, David.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, and Mick Field, the editor of Slugger O'Toole. Good morning to you, Mick.
Hi, Steve.
Okay, so we have a full house this morning. Let's start with you. The $2 million is a drop in the ocean compared to the big figures, but what does it say as a statement of intent from the DUP and the other political parties, I guess, who wanted to do it, the DUP saying no?
It's pathetic. That's what it is. As John has pointed out, there the million or the a poor pensioner in a £1 million house is a myth. And if such people do exist, there is help for them through pension tax credits and through the rate system. There's already support for people that can't afford their rates, so they could avail of that. But the DUP knows that of these 8,000 people affected who'll get £1,000 extra bill or £900 extra bill, a lot of them will complain, and it just doesn't want to face those complaints. It's that weak. That's the new big house unionism. A handful of wealthy people, extremely wealthy people in North Down, will now dictate what the DUP does, and it will block the budget at the Assembly. And this was already, or at the Executive, this was already a very limited measure. Mm. Had the cap been removed completely, it would have raised £11 million. And £11 million is a significant amount of money to raise at Stormont through the rates powers that it has.
So if this you've lifted the cap completely, Newton?
Well, now, it isn't really realistic to impose £20,000 rates bills on anyone. I think that would appear unfair because it's so out of whack with the rest of the UK. But it was a very, very minimal rise that Sinn Féin had proposed. Very, very modest, just a statement of intent, as mentioned. But the intent it reveals is that the DUP, now that it doesn't control finance, now it's not the largest party at Stormont, clearly it thinks its political motivation is just to do absolutely nothing that might ever cause it any unpopularity whatsoever, and let Sinn Féin take the rap. And that will be a disaster, just as it was when Sinn Féin did it to the DUP for the past 20 years. I mean, do they not see that? They clearly don't care. I think this is a very ominous sign for Stormont's finances.
David?
Well, look, I think I agree with a lot of what Newton said, although I probably don't just agree entirely. One thing I think I would say is that, you know, the DUP have clearly made a call here that whether or not, you know, there is a myth around pensioners who are asset rich and cash poor, I think there's a wider fundamental here. And I think that there's an argument from a lot of DUP voters to essentially say, look, we are the squeezed middle. You can see the work that the DUP did around childcare. And I think that the DUP have identified people who are probably from working families, both, you know, husband and wife, both partners, children in the childcare system. And I think that this will be seen by a lot of DUP voters and any sort of focus group as basically just lumping more tax onto us. And essentially, it's not necessarily tax the rich to feed the poor. And I think that would be an unfair narrative. But I think what it is that it's looking at people who are the bog standard DUP voter. And from the DUP's point of view, it would be foolish to follow through in this. One other point I would make, Stephen.
That bog standard voter, as you're describing it, also needs facilities, roads, health, education, and tough choices. Well, choices need to be made, don't they? That those voters have and it's 2 million in this instance, but if the optics are frightening for any political party of raising taxes any more in Northern Ireland, then how do we improve services if Westminster don't give us any more money?
And look, Stephen, I have said this for some time, where I think that revenue raising is a necessary evil, but I think that the difficulty is when we are revenue raising, it will impact upon those who are not exempt from, for example, continuing to get, let's say, free prescriptions for talk's sake, or looking at water charges and how that would be implemented. But I think as well, Stephen, there's, you know, talking to people in and around the DUP, there's clearly now been there's certainly a narrative that the civil service is bloated. There's a narrative we can see even recently in the Education Committee, where David Brooks had put, you know, huge pressure onto a civil servant who clearly wasn't across their brief. And I think that there's probably a wider fear here within the DUP that if we get the situation where we're actually giving more power to local councils, because we're actually saying, look, we can raise rates, and as you say, and rightly so, Stephen, this goes on to bin collections and various things. But some of the soundings that are coming out of our 11 councils are not positive. You know, there are councils who have been right across the news because of how poorly they're governed. So I think there's a fear here, if we give more power to unelected and unaccountable civil servants, that's not good for Northern Ireland, in the view of a lot of people from the DUP.
I'll come to you in one second, Mick. Let's bring Sammy in as our first call of the day. Morning, Sammy.
What about you, Stephen? I think a lot of people out in the streets are just tired of the DUP saying no to everything. No to the opportunities from the protocol. No to LGBT rights. No to tax. Finding money in the budget from reform. Raising money ourselves. And is it not true that we have been set a task for the Assembly to raise £130 million, and in return, Westminster has agreed to write off £650 million of debt that we've built up over the last couple of years? That's 5-1. And here we have again the DUP.
Well, this wouldn't have raised very much. This would have raised 2 million. The point of this programme today, the point of this discussion today is that if they are blocking this, what else would they block? And do the public support them? Well, for those people that aren't getting their rates increased, they've done a good job for them, have they not?
The DUP are in scorched earth mode. They will block all reform and all progress in this country to make it as big a basket case as possible, so there'll just be stagnation at every level. That's what I think.
Well, McFeety, is that fair?
No.
I don't know where he's getting the evidence for that. Look, this all feels very suspicious to me because, you know, these negotiations are supposed to be private. And I think one of the things I would say in slight defence of Gordon Lyons is that there is an obligation on these executive parties who, remember, they have power, but they can only exercise power as long as they share it, is that all of this stuff needs to be looked in the round. 2 million, you know, 2 million's nothing. This is tokenistic. You know, and as John Campbell pointed out earlier,
the amount is tokenistic, but the discussion around it prompted Gordon to say we're already taxed to death, and he then said any increases need to be carefully considered, and he wasn't just talking about rates. That's
no,
the point.
And that is a fair point. David's made the point about value for money, but what I'm saying is it's not a substantial raise. And John Campbell pointed out, The rises in the regional rates for domestic rates have been at the level of inflation and no higher. And that's a pretense, and that's where the money is. That is a pretense that somehow Northern Ireland doesn't have all these spending obligations, all of these things that it needs to get houses built. There's something like 19,000 houses that have been given permission that cannot be built, because Northern Ireland Water cannot keep up with the demand, and that has a knock-on effect to house owners or people trying to get onto the ladder. £38,000 it takes as a deposit now for the average person to get to buy their first house. So it's all very well saying that that we have a problem. We don't want to burden people, but we're burdening the young by not taking bold decisions, and I'm afraid a tax measure that only raises 2 million quid when it costs 15 million quid just to upgrade a water pumping station in order to build 700 houses in Derry, I think is a very poor excuse. I feel like we're being played here somewhat, that this is all about the optics and very little about actually rolling up sleeves and getting the hard stuff done.
Newton?
Well, there's no doubt that Stormont and the councils waste money, but there's very little signal from the DUP that it's in cost-cutting mode. I live in Belfast. I don't pick up any signal from the DUP here like you used to get from Peter Robinson when he ran Castlereagh, that it was a lean, mean machine and rates were low and services were efficient. The DUP and Sinn Féin in Belfast are engaged in what other parties have described as a carve-up of community funding, where it's one for me, one for you, you know, as much money as they can dish out to their favoured community groups as possible. That's the sense I get here. Grants are given away to groups, to community groups that consume the rates of entire neighbourhoods year after year. There's no sense of that being cut. So this new populism from the DUP also doesn't, it doesn't extend to them talking about reducing the wage bill in the public sector, which is 80% of public sector costs. You can't cut costs. Hang on, Stephen. You can't cut costs if you're not going to cut headcount. Bear in mind, the DUP and Sinn Féin did that in Fresh Start. They got civil service numbers down by 10%. Where's that talk from them? They're just saying we'll give you lower taxes, but nothing else will change. That's not sustainable.
So, in the context of what you're saying, Newton, do you feel Northern Ireland needs an Elon Musk type character to come in and have a look at spending? If the political parties won't, if the individual political parties won't do it, should there be some type of spending czar having a fresh look at the size of civil service, the size of our spend in the public sector?
For many years, Nelson McCausland, of course, was a great man for this. For many years, there were people in the DUP, thinkers in the DUP, who watched American politics and culture war politics very closely and thought they could draw from it. I don't think the DUP is quite like that anymore, not so much, but they'll certainly have been watching what's going on in America. But of course, this blocking of the rates cap lifting at Stormont preceded anything we knew about Elon Musk coming in or Donald Trump being elected Obviously, people, everyone around the world is looking at this and thinking about it. But we're not. Are we hearing that from the DUP? Let them come out and say it.
Other political parties too, isn't it? Why would the executive and Stormont not say, look, we're bringing someone in. We it's difficult in that mandatory coalition to agree where to cut and where to raise and all of that. We're bringing someone in to look at the total spend. Why not?
Because the executive is still stuck at the point where it's trying to pass through its budget and programme for government and a modest rates rise, and the DUP is blocking it. If the DUP is going to block a tax rise, then perhaps it should start coming out and saying how it's going to fund that with spending cuts.
Go ahead, David. Why wouldn't we have, and I'm not saying what Elon Musk is, there are very many detractors from an unelected person coming in and starting to look at the heart of government, but should there be an independent, arm's length, someone with authority coming in and looking at the size of the civil service, looking at the grants we pay out, looking at the spend, as well as looking at why there is this discussion about revenue raising? Why not?
I think, Stephen, it wouldn't take a genius to, it doesn't take the wealthiest man in the world to look at Northern Ireland and understand, as Newton rightly says, we have a hugely inflated civil service, public sector, which is 80% of which, as Newton has said, is based on wages. Now, reality of the situation, and Newton again is right around Belfast City Council. Belfast City Council is essentially a mini Stormont. And what I mean by that is there will be a carve-up where the DUP and Sinn Féin will sit down in a room and say, look, we need a bit of money for bonfires. You need a bit of money for the field, the fila. Let's scratch each other's back and let's move on. The difficulty will be whenever someone, whoever that person is, look, it's happened with the Bangor report, Stephen, so it's happened. They cannot implement it. All they can do is come in and say, here are my recommendations. But as Newton rightly says, we can't get a budget passed. We can't get a programme for government passed. So there's absolutely no chance that we're going to go in and start, you know, cutting 10% of the civil service, because it just simply won't happen. And our difficulty is here, our employment figures in Northern Ireland are inaccurate in my view, because basically we keep people in employment within positions that, quite frankly, if they were hit by a bus in the morning and not replaced, no one would notice.
In defence of the civil service, where's the evidence that it's overly bloated? Where is that evidence?
Well, look at our civil. Look at the number of people who are employed within the public sector in Northern Ireland, comparison to other parts of the United Kingdom and other parts of Western Europe or the Western world. We have got a population of around 2 million people, and because of the nature of our, you know, stagnant government, our government which is never good going, which will always be inefficient, we create a situation where we have let too much in the defence of civil servants, too much power and responsibility on their plates in the last 25 years on and off, because our politicians haven't been capable of making those decisions, whether small P politically or large P politically. So the evidence is there, Stephen, but the difficulty is we do not have a system that allows one party to have a majority to do what Trump's doing, whether you agree or disagree with it, but allows them to come in to say, here are things we are going to change, and I have a democratic mandate to do something about it. We have a system of barter in our country, which requires constant negotiation internally between parties to carve up the pie to keep everybody somewhat happy.
Here's Jason next. Morning, Jason. 030-30-80-55-55. Go ahead, Jason. Morning.
Good morning, Stephen. I agree with the cap at the minute, because there is a cash crisis. But I don't agree with Gordon Lyons saying that people are getting it tight. Considering I spoke on your show the other day about, they were talking about giving herself £19,000 pay rise. But if Keith Archibald's...
They don't give themselves any pay rise. It's an independent body, but they certainly want to legislate so that the comparative of how people are paid a lot more across the water has to be legally
They put their
considered.
Own people on it, but so they did. But if Keith Archibald's got her way through, legislation through, what would they do with that 2 million? Newton said about the water board, Northern Ireland Water, needing so much money to build houses. Would they guarantee that they would give it to them?
Well, the 2 million would be a drop in the ocean towards
what's
needed
for
water infrastructure. Jason, thank you. Morning to you. Mick Fieldy, I had to squeeze it out of Gordon Lyons. Why is the DUP not shouting from the rooftops if they think this is a popular policy to block rates reform? Why are they not issuing press statements and blocking it and shouting from the rooftops about it? Sorry.
Well, because this is all supposedly in negotiation. Bear in mind, you know, they've been back in power for over a year. There's no budget. There's no program for government. Sinn Féin and the Republic are tearing strips off the Republic's government because they have published a program for government. It took less than 2 months, even with the Christmas holidays in the middle of it. And a year later, we're still waiting. This is all internal negotiations that somebody has decided to take out to the press before anything's been finalised. But why does it take a year to finalise a budget? Why does it take a year to finalise a programme for government? If we don't see what the programme for government is, we don't see what the workload is, how can we judge what a decent tax rate is? And to reinforce something again that John said earlier on, Northern Ireland is not put upon. Northern Ireland, because of the lower housing costs, even though that we're well short of our housing targets, we're substantially better off than Wales, substantially better off than Scotland, marginally better off than England, and we can't keep on just simply keeping everything in the same little box when we have a health service to sort out, when we have people. We have the job market growing at a rate that we've almost never seen before. New jobs kind of coming on, and we have the opposite of a growth mentality. We have a keep it tight, keep it small. Even the 2 million thing that rise that Sinn Féin and the DUP are arguing over, it's nonsense. It won't pay for anything. Barely pay for, for stamps. Given the scale of the obligations that are ahead of us, and there's a lack of seriousness here. Lee Reynolds said something really interesting on The View last week, and he said, we're really good at doing small to medium things that are easy to do. We're really bad at doing the medium to big things that are hard to do. And this is a perfect example of the two parties that were voted to be in partnership with each other failing to agree on really basic things while the rest of Northern Ireland falls apart.
Let me pause there at 9:33 and get the latest news from the BBC. Good morning, and thank you for joining us here in the Nolan Show today, 0303 80 55 55. So we're talking this morning about the DUP blocking rates reform in terms of lifting the cap on houses worth 400 grand to 485 grand. It would mean round about between 700 and 1,000 quid for those people who owned houses that would go into that bracket. But we're also introducing the notion this morning as to whether some type of czar would be wanted. And look, whether it's wanted by the political parties or not, we need to explore. But given how we see Elon Musk and what he's doing in America, and look, many people say it's outrageous what he's doing. An unelected official going in there and starting to rip apart different departments and a political agenda, very much it's Trump's political agenda, isn't it, at the heart of what he's doing. But if there was a czar in Northern Ireland that came in and started looking at the grants that are funded, at the size of the civil service, the size of the public sector, would you want that? 0303 80 55 55. I'm pretty sure Mike Nesbitt floated something about his R for the health service. Would you want it? Harry, morning to you. What do you
think? Morning, Stephen. I am.
Who's got the radio on in the background? I've been shouting about this from City Beat days.
It's not on the background now, Stephen.
Good man.
I'm a pensioner. I'm 86 years old.
Yes, it's good. You have it on the background. At least you're listening.
For my rates. Now, it's easy for these people to talk about putting this and that up. As a pensioner, I can't control the income I have. I have to wait on other people increasing my wages. So, £1,000 plus, I can't exactly know what it is, but it's over £1,000. So, where am I going to get the money to do this? Could you ask me that?
It's a very fair question, Harry, you're saying. You're saying you don't have a lot of disposable income. Others might argue that, look, the bills could rack up, and then after you die, it could come out of your estate.
This is a long way to wait.
Well, I hope it is.
Steve,
but look, ultimately, though, Harry, would you agree with it?
I'm other people to put my wages up. And if you're lucky, Stephen, and you stop eating, you may reach to be a pensioner. So you're talking for yourself now. It's all right, these people who have plenty of money. But I don't have plenty of money, so where am I going to get the extra money these people are talking about?
So, Harry, would you support a principle where you're not expected to pay now, but after you die, when your house is sold, the bill would be paid then, or do you think that would be unfair on the people that would inherit your money? Tell me why.
You take the money it is to have a burial. That's big money as well, Stephen. So that is on the family. If to say you don't have any insurance or anything you got, you're relying on the family. You can't have a pauper's grave now, Stephen.
We're hearing Newton Emerson through Harry one call this morning. Maybe why the DUP blocking this? It feels or sounds to a wider base that they're protecting people, but are they?
Well, the kind of complaint you've just heard is very effective in our political system, not just to the DUP, but you see it to parties in Westminster as well. And it is slowly draining the life out of the economy across the Western world. Things like the pensions triple lock, the refusal to tax property and wealth, the refusal to consider higher death duties or inheritance tax. This is what's causing wealth to shift from the young up to the old. That the hoarding of property is destroying their potential, the potential of young people. It's highly corrosive to society across the Western world. But this is clearly an issue the DUP has decided is way over its pay grade. I'm just exhausted listening to these complaints from pensioners. They are the richest, the wealthiest section of the population. They are endlessly pandered, and a small I'm presuming a relatively small segment of them you had your say. Let me have mine. They simply will not consider even tiny increases in their taxes, although their pensions go up by above inflation every year, and there's help available through the benefit system for them if they can't pay their rates. It's time to shoulder their burden. This thing they come out with about how they worked all their lives, well, we all do. You know, that doesn't make you stand out.
I'll let you respond, Harry.
Well, he's putting out his rich pensioners out there. I am one of the ones that's not a rich pensioner, so.
What he's saying is,
would he like to be able to pay over £1,000? And if these people put up the rates, all I'm getting for rates, Stephen, is to come once a week and they empty the bins, and sometimes they don't come and empty the bins, and you have to ring them up. I have what you call assisted collection, and if they put a different crew on, they come and they drive on past. My wife has been out to the street shooting at them, and they drove on. So what am I paying my money for? Once a week to get my bins emptied. So you see the guy you're talking to there, if he's healthy enough, he may get to be a pensioner, so he should put in his lip.
Stephen, I think Stephen, one valid point that Harry has made there is around the question of what am I getting for this rate increase? And that's a valid point where anecdotally, a lot of people will be feeding back to political parties like the DUP, and they'll be saying, bar getting my bin lifted, and Harry has said that maybe doesn't happen every single week, what am I getting for the money? And I think if you walk down to any council building across the 11 councils in Northern Ireland, hugely staffed, you've got, you know, planning departments, for example, as Mick has highlighted in previous shows, who are putting up roadblocks to businesses trying to make money, which is ironic given the gap in funding that we're talking about. So, you know, Harry, whether you agree or disagree with him, has got a valid point, which won't be the only person, or he won't be the only person in Northern Ireland that is feeding that back to political parties.
When you've just talked about planning there, you're prompting me to ask a wider question that maybe we should look at next week. And I don't know off the cuff if any of you know, Michael, I'll ask you, like, is our planning system here in Northern Ireland, in terms of how long it takes to turn around a decision, is it on a par with the rest of the UK?
I can't
give
you
know, or do any of you know? But it would be interesting to know, wouldn't it?
View on that, but what I can tell you is that there are now 19,000 planning permissions that have been granted, that have got through the system, that the developers cannot afford to build because no sewage
they can't
system.
Plug into the water system, right? And the
exactly
sewage system,
right.
Where's the momentum from Stormont? Where's the big ideas that what they're going to do about it? Are we going to be talking about the same thing in 10 years' time?
This comes back to Harry's point. What am I getting for the money? And without a program for government, this is an accountant's conversation here. What is the $2 million for? Like, where is it going to go? It's going to go absolutely nowhere, because this is one of those false sham fights that Sinn Féin and the DUP have kept the whole population of Northern Ireland enthralled with since they went back to work in 2007, right? Now, I know they've taken 5 years out, two for one and three for the other in the meantime. But the point is, nobody is telling the population what the tax rise is for, what the rate rises would be for, what are the benefits, because they cannot bring themselves to sit down and do the mind-numbingly boring work of working out what they're going to do. And this is a lecture they've had from the Secretary of State last week.
he wasn't saying, as some have said, that there's no money. He said, you can have some money, but you need to show us what you're going to do. We need timelines on it. We need to know what it is you're going to deliver. And I think people would be far more happy to pay a higher rate of in the domestic rate if they knew it was going to fix the health service, get houses built, and bring kids through education and make sure they have the skills to take on these new jobs that are coming down the line.
Here's Kate this morning. Morning, Kate.
Stephen.
Go ahead.
I live in Hollywood, and our rates would take a terrible increase if the proposed cap was removed. Now, we've lived here for a long time. We saved exceedingly hard to get this house. I worked full-time with three children. We paid a huge stamp duty bill to get the house.
So you've got a couple of quid. Like, what's your house worth?
What's our house worth? I would say probably in the region of 800 to 900,000.
Right. So, and you're objecting to paying another 700 to 900 quid a year. That would put you under, would you? You wouldn't be able to put food on the table.
Well, we had worked it out as more than that. But if you're telling me that that's what it is, still and all, I mean, what better services do we get as one of the other listeners had said?
But it's about a redistribution of money, isn't it? From someone like you sitting on
money,
the guts of a million-pound house to maybe people having a house, any house.
Look, I understand that totally. But I think there are other ways to get the money. And I don't mean, I was diagnosed with cancer and that's why I had to give up work. Our income is extremely limited. I mean, one of the reasons we are paying so much, or our house is worth so much, it wasn't worth as much when we bought it or we couldn't have afforded it. The price went up, that was nothing to do with us. It's because it is a lovely area and a lot of people come here and enjoy the area. They leave their rubbish. You speak to the local council, they will spend Mondays, especially during the summer, going along the beach, picking up that rubbish and picking up dog excrement from the beach and all the other things that have to be done to try and keep the area in order. That are a lot of people who are not local causing that,
okay.
But it is us paying it to our council. The council also recently paid £300,000 with they were thinking of proposing a cycleway along the coastal path. That cycleway got nowhere. Nobody wanted it. And there was such a big turnout at the first meeting. The £300,000 was totally lost. So you're saying you're going to make £2 million by trying to cost people more money. £700 might sound like a lot, but to be honest, I am probably out about £200 extra in travelling to hospitals and things at the moment. And £700 would make a difference to my way of life. Yes, it would. And
okay.
I do not see why we should have to pay for extra services just because there is no other money available in the council because they've wasted so much money.
Kate, first of all, I'm sorry to hear about your cancer. I hope you will be okay, and I get the pressure that puts you under, and I'm sorry to hear that. There is, though, you can imagine, Kate, someone listening to this morning, and as you're talking about, you know, the beach beside where you live and your house.
The beach that I will add, but it's not just used by me and locals, it's used by other people as well. The beach is not a private beach. Everyone uses it.
But you can imagine, can you not?
I can totally imagine, and I'm a very regular contributor to charities and things. When I can have the money, I will give it to the Simon community.
It's not your fault, Kate. I'm not suggesting it is. All I'm saying is, as we try to reason in Northern Ireland, where should money go? You can imagine someone that's maybe been sitting on a housing waiting list for years, and we haven't fixed the water infrastructure in Northern Ireland because we can't afford to, or at least the decisions aren't being
made
so that we can.
Because they're too busy wasting money on other things, like cycleways that nobody wants. I'm sorry. You mentioned the civil service as well. Try getting somebody to help you at the moment. You know, it's very difficult. I've been on to so many people recently in the civil service. You get three different answers from three different people. There's no accountability anymore. They're just wasting money.
I'll tell you what we'll do, and let's not discuss it on air, but if there's something where you're not getting an answer from the civil service, my team will speak to you behind the scenes, and we'll see if we can get you an answer. Newton Emerson, what's your reaction to this?
Well, I think that gives you an idea of one easy win for the councils in Northern Ireland. I feel the same about the litter in Belfast and the state of Belfast. It's filthy. Why am I paying £1,000 a year for a city that looks like a dump? And that's actually a relatively cheap thing for the councils to fix, to address. There's parts that the Department for Infrastructure needs to help them with, but they can address that quite quickly. And they just don't, for some reason. It's not a priority. They spend money elsewhere. It wouldn't be a huge thing to fix. They don't focus on the upfront jobs that would make a big difference to ratepayers. Another thing I think that's very noticeable is that leisure centres, they cut back on opening hours during work to working hours. So if you work a 9-to-5 job, you can't use the leisure centre. That's happening in councils around Belfast. They penny pinch in ways that have a significant impact on ratepayers' quality of life, all while puffing up the salaries of people at City Hall. I think that is something that they need to look at if they want legitimacy for higher rates.
David Graham. Sorry, Mick Fieldy.
Yeah, look, I mean, I grew up in Hollywood. I know what a beautiful place it is. But look, at the end of the day, this is an academic conversation about one minor tax raise. And to be fair,
it's prompted the wider conversation, though, hasn't it?
It feels, yeah, it has, but not because the politicians are actually considering the wider issues. And to some extent, Kate's annoyed because she feels she's being made a scapegoat here. And it does feel a little bit symbolic that that the proposal is trying to punish in some way people who are better off. When in actual fact, the quantum that it raises is minute and will not go anywhere. And in fact, if you were to raise the overall rate by another 2, 3, 4, 5%, then one, the burden gets spread more evenly, and it's not being one demographic is not being signalled as somehow kind of responsible for the state of the public finances. So, and it's lack of courage and lack of imagination, and lack of telling people exactly what that money is going to be spent on. Can somebody tell me where that £2 million is going to benefit Northern Ireland PLC? I can't see it.
Newton, how game-changing would it be in Northern Ireland if we look at the water infrastructure issue that we've had for many years, and unless something's done, we're going to have for another, we'll be talking about in 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. If you think of how businesses may be able to establish here and get planning permission, what that would do to the economy, then
yes,
housing.
That's the critical
issue.
So
why is it not right up there, as well as, we keep talking about health and rightly so, but should that water infrastructure project not be the focus of a lot of attention from everyone?
It's not as immediate for people as when you've got a huge chunk of the population on health waiting lists. But yes, you're right to raise the business investment issue. Everybody focuses on housing. They don't consider how many jobs we're losing, how much investment we're losing, because businesses can't invest as well. And that is, a massive impact on the economy. There is an idea floating around now to address water funding. This is Sinn Féin's idea for a developer levy on new houses. I know that has issues. It's not perfect. It wouldn't let NI Water borrow, I think, which is a critical problem with it. However, it is the only politically deliverable idea anyone has ever had to come up with this problem, given that there's not going to be water charges in Northern Ireland. It's just undoable for Sinn Féin, so it's not going to happen. So one of the good signs, I think, that's come over the past week is that the new finance minister, Sinn Féin's new infrastructure minister, Liz Kimmins, has come straight out and promoted that quite strongly. Sinn Féin has been rather quiet about it, suspiciously. I think they're nervous about the reaction from developers. But that is something.
How influential are developers and how connected? And I don't mean in an improper way, but how influential are they with these political parties?
Let's not get into any kind of conspiracy theory here. It can't be done without them. So they'll need to cooperate with us. So they have to be brought along, and I think that they need to be. It needs to be impressed upon them that if they can't build houses and sell them, then it's you know, it's not in their interests either. So and they've got concerns about you know, the responsibility that they'll have, especially if they have to build social housing as well. That's a new burden being put on them. That all has to be talked through. So there is an answer there to be worked on. My concern now is that if developers object to it, will the DUP block it as well?
Brian, morning, Brian. Thanks for calling us. Go ahead.
Stephen, yes. Well, Stephen, before Christmas and after Christmas, all I'm hearing from Westminster is no more extra money. So what's the alternative? Raising taxes. Now, you score my thunder there.
Or cutting costs, or looking at how we're spending the money we have.
Well, I'll give you a prime example. You mentioned the building new houses and the problems they're having with the antiquated sewage and water piping. On the news the other night, Stephen, older houses are being affected. They're crumbling foundations because of the water system and the sewage. They're being affected now. Not new houses, which are being affected. They can't build new houses. So, I mean, we're going to have major, major problems all down the years. And we have to raise. I'm a pensioner. Okay, I'm working part-time. I'm a pensioner. But I'm saying it's no. You're talking about bringing some kind of a Houdini in to advise the Stormont here, and he's going to say the same thing: raise taxes. It's a no-brainer.
No, not necessarily. I'm asking whether it would be possible and whether people would want it to bring someone in to also look at where we're currently spending the money we have, whether we need the size of the civil service we've got, whether we need the public sector that we've got, whether the money we're paying out in grants. I don't know. I'm doing this game every day. I have no idea how bloated we are or are not. I have no idea with the grants we're paying, whether we're way out of kilter or we're not. Should someone be looking at it? Let me bring in Nigel and Castle Dawson. Morning, Nigel.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, just a quick one. Our rates in Mid-Ulster are increasing 5.1%. And before Christmas, Mid-Ulster District Council spent almost £500,000 on new Christmas tree lights. £500,000 on Christmas tree lights. Now, the anger's not with the rate increase. The anger is with the attitude of members within Mid-Ulster District Council and how they go about spending the money.
Well, do you not want your place done up for Christmas and will those lights, the cost of those lights be spread out across the next 10 years? What do you want it to be? Black? You don't want the kids to have Christmas lights in your area.
That is when you equate it to the infrastructure. Are Christmas tree lights the most important thing to be buying in Mid-Ulster District Council? Is it the most important? Is that top of the agenda that we spend £500,000? And it's not only that. Whenever you take a deeper look into Mid-Ulster District Council and the way they spent money... There's a serious problem and there's a serious lack of business management within Mid-Ulster District Council. I don't think they're educated enough to run a business, never let alone a council.
Nigel, thank you, Stephen. Stephen, next morning, Stephen.
Hi, good morning. Well, there was almost an hour's time spent, Stephen, with your contributors talking amongst themselves, floating trial balloon solutions.
What does that mean? What does that mean? Everybody's giving an opinion. Who are you talking to? Talking amongst ourselves. Everybody's on here giving an opinion. Okay. Are you floating above everybody else this morning?
Yeah.
What do you mean, Stephen, talking amongst themselves? You're talking, as is everybody else.
One word for you, okay? Bengoa. Okay? How are we doing on that? Right, now, next. Let's move on to the real issue. The councils, okay... they were the people clamouring for more powers, okay? They got their powers. The whole issue of the rate rise, if you like, the lifting of or rising of the cap on the rates, that's down to ratepayers, okay, to pay the bills that the councils essentially awarded to their employees. The very people that Newton and Mick and others are talking about in terms of, well, what are we getting from them? Where's the efficiency? You even mentioned it yourself. Okay? We have no interest in public sector activity here in measuring productivity. We're at the public sector dependency.
And good call this morning, Stephen. Thank you for your comments. I'll leave 30 seconds each, Newton.
That didn't seem to disagree with anything we had actually said in the past. Yes, of course, we need to look at public sector productivity. And you can't, in the end, you can't cut costs significantly in the public sector without reducing headcount.
Mick.
Yeah, well, look, as far as Bengoa is concerned, absolutely, Stephen's got a spot-on point. But in order to save money, you have to invest. And our executive is simply not coming up with the goods when it comes to what that plan looks like, when it's going to be delivered, how it's going to be delivered, who's going to deliver it. And we're hiding behind minute changes that aren't even being publicly proposed, but are subject of some internal argument between finance and the executive office. And it's just treating the rest of us like children.
McFeelty, Newton Emerson, thank you very much indeed. 030-30-80-55-55. The news at 10 o'clock, coming up right now. Good morning, everyone. It's the Nolan Show from the BBC. There is clearly a problem with the post within the BBC this morning, because we are searching for the Valentine's cards that no doubt lots of you have sent in for me. So we're going to have an investigation into the BBC post room. We were expecting a couple of hundred at least for me, and there doesn't seem to be any. There's clearly a problem at my house as well, because none have come to my house either. What is going on with the post service? This needs an investigation. Anyway, if you're picking up the phone to us, 030-30-80-55-55. If you're sending a story to us, nolan@bbc.co.uk. There's over 250,000 of you now. That's close to 250,000. I can't. No, it is 270,000 of you now following me on our Twitter club at Stephen Nolan, so you can communicate with me 24 hours a day. Next, anti-police posters have been erected in South Belfast around the Holylands area. They call for people to reject what they call British policing in Ireland. Just this week, Chief Constable John Boucher revealed that of the latest 3,500 applications made to the PSNI, just 27% are from a Catholic background. How big an impact do posters like these have on recruiting people? Who's put them up? How did they put them up? And who's going to take them down? The UUP MLA, Doug Beattie, with us this morning. These posters are pretty disgusting, Doug.
They are, Stephen. I mean, it's pure intimidation. And if it's not an offence, it should be an offence. And we should be taking action against those individuals who have put this up. Because what they're doing is targeting people in the Holy Lands who may be thinking about a career in the police force. And they're telling them, look, and if you read it, it's saying, you're not safe. You'll not be safe if you join the police. And I think that's pretty appalling. And I think we've got this absolutely wrong as a society. We should be venerating our police officers. We should be allowing our police officers in our schools at a very early age, you know, to tell people about the career in the police. And politicians like me, or from nationalist communities or other communities, should be out and helping the police to recruit, because we need them to keep us safe.
The PSNI have just told the Nolan Show, and this is new, we're aware of a number of inappropriate, unacceptable posters in the Belfast area featuring our advertising material. These posters have clearly been created by those that seek to thwart our recruitment campaign. We would urge anyone who comes across the posters, either online or physically, not to share or circulate this material further. Just to give people a sense of what these posters say, the job requirements: live in fear, always look over your shoulder, be despised in your own community, collude with loyalist paramilitaries, cover up murders, mentally abuse children on a daily basis. They always look over your shoulder, live in fear, high risk of injury. Is that, Trevor Clark, also joining us from the DUP, stay there, Doug, is this a deliberate attempt to intimidate people from within our communities to join the police?
Absolutely, Stephen. I mean, this speaks to the problem within the recruitment processes and why, in particular, Catholics are not coming forward, where you see the whole tenor of what's been said in this. And it's unbelievable. We're actually living fear and high risk of injury. I mean, spells out entirely clear of what these people are proposing to do and trying to prevent people from joining the police. Indeed, there is people living in fear currently because of people just like this, the people who put these posters up, and that's why it's important that actually people ignore these posters, join the police, and join with the police to stamp this out.
Well, you say that, and yet, Trevor, the reality is whoever put up these posters, and look, this is not a nice thing for me to say, whoever put them up, have they also got the ability and the intent for those people who do join the police to create fear, to injure them?
Well, I mean, look, we all know, given that where we've came from in Northern Ireland, that people have had the capacity to injure, and even worse in terms of our security forces. But that said, I may think the police has taken lots of strides to try and improve things. Officer safety is obviously an important and paramount. But what we need to do is we need to get the people in behind the police. We need to get them on the ground, and we need to stamp out the thugs. I mean, actually, what these people want to do is keep their jackboots on the people within the communities so as they can control it, so as indeed they can continue their criminality and their drugs and their thieving and everything else that goes along with it. So look, none of us are blind to the fact that these people are dangerous in some instances, but we have to take them on. We have to absolutely take them on.
Doug Beattie, is there any notion that the people who put up these posters might be trying to make their political point and do not intend any injury on police officers or intimidation?
Well, these posters have the markings of the 32 County Sovereignty Committee, and that grouping is linked to dissident Republicans, violent dissident Republicans. Absolutely, their intent is to generate fear. Stephen, there's no other way around saying that. They're to generate fear, and that fear, whether it's perpetrated by them or whether it's perpetrated by others, is absolutely real. And if you are a young person, male or female, who are thinking about a career in the police, this will make you think twice. I think it's absolutely appalling, and we need to do everything we can to stamp this out. But I'll go back to something I said at the very start. I think that we should look at this and see if this is intimidation, if it's legal, if it's illegal. If it's illegal, then we should be taking issues with those people who have got those posters up, and that means taking issues with those people who are known to be part of the 32 County Sovereignty Committee.
How do they go up? And like whether it's daylight or nighttime, I don't think I could walk out in a street and somebody not notice me. Is there not a question about how these things, these days with Ring doorbell cameras and CCTV and everything that's around, how do these go up with impunity? How do the police not find the people who put them up?
Well, look, you're right, and you say something very valid, and that is there's lots of CCTV and there's lots of other devices which record it, and you should be able to track them down. But no doubt they'll put them up with their masks on to hide their identity. You know, a United Ireland, one sticker at a time. You know, I've seen them once before sticking stickers over the top of the term Northern and Northern Ireland, as if that's going to make people change their mind. And I have a sympathy for the police where they say, well, look, I've got real crime to go and chase after, not some absolute buck agents sticking posters up around the place. But I go back to the very start. This is intimidation. And how on earth are we going to get people to join the police? Certainly from minority backgrounds and from the Catholic community, if we've got these lunatics running around like this.
Trevor?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Doug. I mean, that is the only way we need to continue to encourage, and indeed nationalist leaders need to come out and encourage nationalists to join the police and ignore in certain terms some of this message. And I mean, this is a fear. I mean, and the other point you made, Stephen, about the cameras, I wouldn't put it past some of these people haven't the capabilities to do it themselves. They use other people because they've got their jackboots on the young people within our communities as well, and forcing and coercing them to do these things to prevent themselves from being caught. So there's different ways to look at this. But ultimately, I mean, we need to encourage the community to ignore this. We need to encourage the police, actually, in terms of Doug's point about intimidation, to get out and get these posters taken down. And I mean, if more come up, take them down.
Well, who should take them down?
We just need to continue to respond to them.
What do you mean encourage the community? Who should be taking these? Here we go in this runaround again,
which I've been doing for 20, 30 years. If you listen,
who should
Stephen,
be taking these posters
listen,
down?
If you listen, Stephen, rather than interrupting, I'm actually asking the police. The police went into other areas and took offensive material down. So in this instance, I believe the police should do it. So there is no running around. There's no pointing the finger at who should or who shouldn't do it. I'm clear, saying the police should take these down because this is a measure of threat against people and it's preventing Fair them enough. From joining a lawful force.
Fair enough. Do you think, Doug Beattie, do you concur with Trevor this morning that the police should get in and they should take these down? This is about their staff.
Well, I think there's a number of arguments to that, and I think Trevor has articulated them well. Look, if the police are there and the police can take them down, the police should take them down. I'm telling you now, Stephen, if they were in my community here now, I'd be taking them down. And I would call on the communities to take these things down. I've got to add something if I can.
So what do you mean? Local? Are you talking about politicians? You're saying you would take them down?
I would absolutely take them down if they were within my community. Absolutely.
Well, why is it why don't you go in and take them down, whether it's in your community or not then? Why don't you go and do it?
Well, yeah. I mean, you want me to jump in the car and drive to the Holy Lands and take them down? I don't even know where they are. But if they're in the community, Stephen, what I'm saying to you now is I would take them down. But can I just ask you a question? And this is a fair, valid question.
Sure.
For yourself. You've got myself and Trevor on. And look, people will say, "Look, here you are. You've got the unionists on again, demonising certain people." I did you ask for nationalist politicians to come on and speak about this? Because that would be a powerful message now today. If there was a nationalist politician on your show now saying exactly the same thing as me and Trevor, so that we can stand united to say this is not acceptable and we support our police force, that is what will help us move our societies forward.
So we will absolutely look, as you know, Sinn Féin boycott the programme because I dared to ask questions about the Bobby Storey funeral. You know, a journalist is isolated because I asked questions. So that's what Sinn Féin do. I look forward to them coming back into the programme at whatever stage so that they could comment about things like this. We will certainly contact them. We will certainly convey any statement that they have, and we will ask the SDLP and the other political parties. It's a fair question you're asking, Doug, to be fair to you. Trevor and Doug, just before you both go this morning, and Trevor, if I can start with you, we were covering a story yesterday about the annual Foyle Pride Festival, and Trevor, I noticed that your DUP colleague Gary Middleton has responded to Foyle Pride banning any political parties who were involved in the Northern Ireland Executive's decision to ban puberty blockers, and Gary has issued a statement, Trevor, on behalf of the DUP, in which he has said this is an incredibly honest statement from Foyle Pride, which backed up what we've been saying for years. The Pride Parade is a protest, and therefore the involvement of the police, the BBC or other public sector bodies is clearly incompatible. Public sector organisations should not be involved in political campaigns. He says we rightly oppose puberty blockers as they're destructive to children. These treatments are not and could never have been described as normal healthcare. Can I just get each of your opinions about Pride banning political parties? Because they're saying, look, if you don't represent what their views are, then don't come and try to benefit from publicity on their Pride days. You first, Trevor.
Well, Stephen, I mean, I don't think I could add anything to an honest statement that Guy Middleton has put out. I think Guy has hit the nail on the head. And I mean, it has reinforced what the DUP have been saying for some time about the whole event of Pride and the nature of it and the political nature of it. So I don't think I could add anything to Guy. I think Guy has nailed it in the statement that he has provided.
Doug?
Well, the bottom line, Steve, sorry, mate. The bottom line, look, this is Pride's parade. It's up to them to decide who they want to attend and who they don't want to attend. I don't have to always agree with them. I disagreed with them in 2023 when they banned Ulster Rugby from taking part in the Pride. But ultimately, it's theirs. But they have to understand something, Stephen. They're alienating people who actually stood beside them. As a unionist MLA, I stood with the LGBTQ plus community to fight for equal marriage. And I tell you what, I got a real backlash in doing that. But if they decide that they want to ban, then it's really up to them to do it, and that's their call.
Do you think it's acceptable?
Well, it doesn't matter whether it's acceptable or not. It's theirs. It is a protest parade. It's always been a protest. They've said it, and they haven't lied to say that.
If it's always been a protest parade, then why were organisations like the police at it in the past?
Well, that was an argument to be had. I personally didn't think the police should have been at it. I raised that at the Pride Talk Pack event in 2023, and I was shouted down. I have to say, but you know, by disagreeing, I was shouted down. I haven't been back to the Pride Talk Pack event since. But Jeffrey Dudgeon, a gay man who helped decriminalise homosexuality in Northern Ireland, also attended a Pride Talkback event and was shouted down for his points of view. This is up to them.
I guess what the organisers are saying who have taken this decision, Doug, is that they feel that some political parties in Northern Ireland, they come for the publicity of we're a party for all and you're waving the flag and taking the publicity of that day. But when it actually comes down to some of these issues, you don't stick up for gay people enough. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And if that's what they feel, that's what they feel. I think the real issue that they have is the issue of puberty blockers. But look, every conversation...
And how do you feel about puberty blockers?
Look, the medical evidence is that there's not enough evidence and they have been banned because of that very reason. So I'm supportive of that. I'm supportive of the health minister bringing in that ban. All of the executive parties supported that ban because that's what the medical evidence took us and that's the right thing to do. If they've taken issue with that, that's fine.
Okay. Doug Beattie, Trevor Clark, thank you very much for coming on this morning. We'll get your reaction today as well. 030 30 55 55 is the number to call. It's 19 minutes past 10. See? I knew I could squeeze it out of you. One person in Northern Ireland who loves me. Just one, maybe. Big Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. You know I love you very much.
Happy Valentine's Day to everyone. Happy Valentine's Day to our First Minister, Michelle, to our Deputy First Minister, Emma Little-Pengelly, to Naomi Long, and all the Alliance Party, to Sinn Féin, and Gerry Kelly, and John O'Dowd. And have I left somebody out? Jim Allister would be raging if I didn't give Jim a big hug through the airwaves and tell Jim I love you, Jim.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, Stephen.
Love you, Naomi
and
Michelle.
You're the one that's important to us.
Yes.
And I tried to get Sam a New Year card because I got out of hospital last night.
Oh, did you?
I got out last night at 8 o'clock.
Well, that's fantastic.
After the 8 days then.
Well, that's fantastic.
And you've got to... I never got Sam and Stephen a Valentine's card.
See, that's the... Well, how did nobody else send me one? That's the point.
Well, sure, like, it just post must... hasn't been round yet.
It must be a postal error.
It must be a postal error. Because I usually get some too, and I haven't got any yet.
You see?
I usually get one from you as well as you like me sent you one.
And tell me this, are you happy to be out of hospital then?
Well, I'm still ill, Stephen.
Okay.
Hospital ladders. I have to go to a hospital and another 3 weeks to the nearer, and then I have to wait on the Ulster hospital ringing me, and then I have to go back to the Lagan Valley again. So I'm still very ill.
Well, listen, I hope you keep the radio on. I hope we can give you a wee bit of friendship.
I keep the radio on all in the hospital with me, and the porters was always asking about you. Romico, I think he called himself Romico.
Romico,
he says he knows you, and he says he's going to shout because you didn't come up to visit me.
Ah, he'd be right, wouldn't he, to shout? I've never heard of Romico in my life.
Is very good too, you know.
Okay.
So well,
listen, thank you for calling me this morning, and happy Valentine's Day to everyone listening today. So, looky at this. Thank you, Barbara. Morning to you. My next guests have been together for 53 years. That's longer than I've been alive. John and Hazel McLean. John, good morning.
Good morning.
You've been alive for more than 53 years. You've been married for 53 years.
53
My goodness.
Years. That's true.
Wow. Wow. And let me say good morning to Hazel. I know you're using the same phone this morning. Morning, Hazel.
Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, look, if we can ask John first, when did you first set eyes on Hazel? Bring me back 53 years ago.
I set eyes on her when she came to Stranmullis College one day. But I had a chance of meeting her and didn't know it on the Sunday night before that. And what happened was, the minister of the Baptist Church in the centre of town had contacted me and asked me, would I give him my testimony to declare to the whole church how I became a Christian? So, I
and
said,
was it love at first sight, John?
Oh, I would say it would be. I would say it would be. But, you know, love at first sight sometimes has got hiccups along the way.
Of course, of course. And,
one of the hiccups is I thought wrongly that she was going with a nice-looking fella from England called Dennis.
Right.
So I couldn't, as a good Christian, I could not, let's say, spoil his fun.
Yeah, you couldn't move in there and buck Dennis out of the road.
No.
But you got there in the end, sir, obviously.
I certainly did. Well, what happened was...
Dennis was given the heave-ho.
Oh, no, he wasn't, actually. He decided that he was returning to England himself.
Oh, he dumped Hazel, did he?
So he may very well have, or else she didn't help him, you know.
Yeah. Let me speak to Hazel this morning.
Here she is.
Hello.
Hello again, Hazel.
Hello, nice to hear your voice.
Come you a bit closer to the phone for me if you can. It's just hard to hear you this morning, Hazel. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, that's brilliant. I was asking John, I'll ask you the same question, Hazel. Was it love at first sight 53 years ago?
Well, I thought he looked very interesting, and I thought he's got a bit of a go to him. And I watched, and I thought, yeah, he's pretty okay. Which
and,
is very, very good.
And I'm hearing about this rascal Dennis.
A blowing force. Long gone.
Yeah, good. You got the right man in the end.
I did. I certainly did.
Tell me this, Hazel. What's it like being together for so long?
Very comfortable. John's always there for me. When I get into panics and can't do things and so on, he's the one who comes and is my saviour, really. Puts two and two together and gets me out of whatever mess I was getting into.
And what's the secret to such a long marriage in this era where maybe some younger people, marriages don't sometimes last as long?
If I knew the answer to that, I would be a very wealthy woman. But I don't. I don't have the answer. Patience, long-suffering, and living with the person, really seeing things through their eyes. But those are all very tenuous qualities, not easy to pick up.
And you're in a care home at the moment. You've just had an operation.
I'm in the care home, yeah.
But both of you are in that care home, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I had an operation not so long ago, on the 2nd of December. And it left me, well, that was a Sunday night. And I was the only person in the house because Hazel was, of course, in the hospital. And I sat down in front of the television and switched it on and waited for it to, I suppose, warm up. But what happened was something I could not explain. I lost total consciousness.
Oh, for goodness
sake. And I didn't waken again until 9:30, I think it was, the following morning.
Right.
And I had no idea what happened to me. But a good friend of mine, Dr.
Didn't mention things, better not.
Better not. Mm-hmm. All right. Good doctor, friend of mine, was to
looked
meet
after
me.
You.
Well, he was coming not to the house, but what he did do, because we were planning to go to a coffee place in, what did you call it?
Well,
the one right in the corner of them.
Tell me this, John. I'm sorry to cut across you. It's just we're coming up to the end of the program. What would you say to people love means, John? Real love means?
It involves quite a lot of, I don't know how I would describe it, but patience, that would do.
Okay. Well, look, happy Valentine's Day to you both. I hope you have many more. John and Hazel, thank you for talking to us. Our last call of the day comes from Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Morning, Stephen. I'm delighted to be able to wish you a very happy St. Valentine's Day. And as I'll miss you so much on a Friday and Saturday and Sunday night when the bloody Irish sport's on and you're not on. And I also miss you during the week when you're on your holidays, sunning yourself up. And here we're sitting here depressed with no Stephen Nolan. You could go up to the Stormont and you could run it on your own.
Well, that's not true now.
You're a great man, and you could run this country all by yourself. Get rid of all of the rest of them.
That's not true. That's very kind of you. Well, we give each other a big hug this morning, Hazel. Happy Valentine's Day.
Nolan, you're one of the best. You are one of the best in my eyes.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. Happy Valentine's Day. And we'll see you on 5 Live tonight at 10 o'clock across the UK for the Nolan Show on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday night. We'll see you back here at Radio Ulster Monday morning. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.